energy so stale in the air. Everybody's running scared. We used to be so carefree. We used to be so happy. We used to have everything we need. Now we gotta
welcome to Village Mentality, where melanated people are connected in spirit, love, and community. What's up, kings and queens, beautiful people everywhere? It's your girl, CK McGee, and I am your host. Hey there, beautiful people. How's everyone doing? I pray that you're all doing as well as you can be. Welcome back to another episode of Village Mentality, the podcast. I'm so glad to have you all here with me in the village, and you're welcome to join me each and every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, I'd also like to give a very warm welcome to those of you who may be tuning in for the very first time. And if you're looking to see just what Village Mentality is all about, you're welcome to catch up on all previous episodes of Village Mentality on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor, Radio Public. And I also provide links to each episode on both Instagram and Facebook, and I'll share those with you at the end of the show. But thanks again to all of you for joining. Village, on a daily basis, I meet with people out there who are dealing with some very difficult issues in their lives. And some are, you know, just about at their wit's end. Now, we can never underestimate the power of holding space for people who are struggling, you know, to come to terms with life's curveballs that are thrown at us without warning. Now, I'm not a mental health professional, and so I don't diagnose conditions or prescribe medications. I am a mental health advocate, a mental health and wellness advocate who has lived experience with mental health conditions. And so as a result, I work to support those around me who may be having a hard time navigating their way through this thing that we call life. As an advocate, I am utilizing my platform to educate and bring awareness around topics that can impact our mental health. And I also hold space for those who simply need someone to listen during times of distress, as well as to act as a sounding board when they're working through things in their lives where they need to gain some clarity. Now, I've learned, again, that we can never underestimate the power of holding space for people who need to be heard and who need to be seen, otherwise understood. It is my absolute mission and purpose to dismantle the stigma around mental illness. And I'm focused on BIPOC communities because, as an African-American woman, I'm extremely concerned about communities of color and their mental health. Now, there are various groups that are represented under that acronym, and it's not that there's a higher prevalence of mental health conditions within these communities, but it's important to note the obstacles that these communities face with regard to their access to mental health care, resources, and services. We may not all have mental illness, but we all have mental health, and we need to make sure that we're taking care of it. Our mental health is part of our overall health, and sometimes, due to life's circumstances, stress, and trauma, we may experience poor mental health outcomes, which are not always caused by chemical imbalance. Through education and advocacy, like by individuals like myself, for instance, who have lived experience, whether it's with mental health conditions or substance use, the hope is that we'll be able to show up in more effective ways to support those around us that may be suffering. Now, I desire to normalize the facilitation of conversations around our mental health. Stigma is a powerful thing, beautiful people, all right? For those of us who have mental health conditions, not only in seeking support from mental health professionals, but in just being able to live the lives that we deserve to live. Village. Now, you hear me talk about this constantly, okay? I talk about this all the time. But self-care is a very, very important tool, in my opinion. And I'm happy to report that slowly but surely, we are beginning to understand just how important it is in our daily lives. And that makes me so happy to be able to say that. Because when you're someone who's constantly pouring into others, there must be a way for you to replenish all that energy that you're pouring into the world. Now, self-care, it's really very simple, and you don't need a lot of time to practice it. It can be as easy as making a decision to take a nap. You heard me, to take a nap because you're tired, all right? Or maybe to go for a nice walk out in nature because you've been inside all day and you need some fresh air. Trust me when I tell you that there are many different ways that we can practice self-care, especially when we view it holistically. The benefits of learning to take care of ourselves extends far beyond us, and it has a positive impact on all those whom we encounter. Now, for someone who may be in crisis or who is experiencing emotional distress, self-care might just be the furthest thing from your mind, which is completely understandable. Because in truth, self-care is something that you grow into. It's not an automatic practice, especially if you've been in crisis. But learning how to identify the things that we need to do in order to take better care of ourselves, not only does it help you to feel good, but again, you'll be able to show up for others more effectively. Self-care, it is for everyone, man, woman, child, no matter what your job is, no matter what your background is, self-care, self-care, self-care is for you. And we need to realize that it's about self-preservation. Self-care helps us to rejuvenate our spirits and our souls so that we can continue to be the fantabulous kings and queens that we most definitely are. And I'll be right here to remind us all of that. That's right. Even I need to be reminded of that fact, each and every chance I get. You dig? Now, if you've heard this show before, then you know that there's going to be plenty of music too. So tonight, we're going to be listening to the music of the first lady of LaFace Records, Miss Toni Braxton. Yeah. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Now, without further ado, I believe that it's time for me to take my first walk of the evening to my musical jukebox. Okay, Village. So tonight, we're going to be listening to the music of one of the queens of love songs, right? Whether she's getting over a broken heart or catching her man with someone else to falling in love with someone, you know, we can always relate to one of her songs. And this first song is no exception. It was written and produced by Babyface, and it was recorded for the motion picture Waiting to Exhale. Now, this song received a lot of airplay here in the U.S., and it topped the Billboard Hot 100 charts and the R&B hip-hop songs chart, and it sold over a million copies. So here she is with one of her biggest hits, Let It Flow.
Monday morning, I'm gonna pack my tears away. Got no cause to look back, I'm looking for me a better day. See the thing about love is that it's not enough if the only thing it brings you is pain. Comes a time when we could all make a change. Darling, just let go. Let it blow, let it blow, let it flow. Everything's gonna work out right, you know.
Just let go. Let it blow, let it blow, let it
flow. Just let it go. Don't nobody want no broke heart. Don't nobody want no to time losers. Oh, now. Ain't nobody gonna love me like you are if you take whatever he brings your way. Oh, no, no, no. See the thing of it, we deserve respect, but we can't demand respect with a chain. Comes a time when we must go our own way. Let love bang, bang. Let it flow. Everything's gonna work out right, you know. Let go.
Baby, 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 baby.
and all I really won't be with you inside me.
Was Toni Braxton, and that was the lead single from her second studio album, Secrets, which was released in 1996. The mid-tempo song represents a joint collaboration between the Grammy Award-winning producer Babyface and Bryce Wilson. The beat of the song was originally for singer-songwriter Brandy, with Dallas Austin pegged to write a lyric to override. However, Braxton had Babyface write lyrics for the song instead. You're Making Me High became Braxton's first number one single on both the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 and Hot R&B Hip-Hop Songs chart, and it remained on top for 1 week, all right, on the former, and for 2 weeks on the latter. Eventually, it went platinum, y'all. Well, Village, you know me. I like to take a little bit of time to talk about some things, whether it be about current events, entertainment, or something that's just on my mind. So why don't we get into my segment called Let's Talk About It. Okay, beautiful people. Now, let's talk a little bit about stress, because April is Stress Awareness Month. First of all, did y'all hear what I said? It's April. I'm still digesting Christmas dinner. Where is the time going? It's cray out here. Can't believe it. But stress is normal, right? And everyone experiences it in response to situations considered threatening or dangerous. Now, when you're stressed, your body responds by producing physical and mental reactions. Now, these stress responses can be positive, you know, keeping you alert to danger, motivated, or adaptable to new situations. Now, stress in and of itself, it's not an illness, but when you experience it frequently, it's, you know, the increase, you know, the risk of it, I should say, it causes the possibility of mental health conditions such as depression, anxiety, psychosis, and substance use problems. Now, you know this already, Village, right? That I need to be able to talk with you, you know, about the impact that stress has on our mental health. I'm always going to circle back to that. Always going to look at everything through a mental health lens. Now, it's important to understand all the changes in the body that occur because of stress. Now, some of the changes that take place in your body range from mild to severe. When we're under stress, your body's nervous system, it takes control. Now, this system regulates the function of your internal organs, such as your heart, stomach, and intestines. Now, long-term stress, it has signs and symptoms that you can identify to help you manage it a little bit better. So some of those common symptoms are feeling overwhelmed, anxiety and restlessness, feeling hopeless and depressed, panic attacks, lack in self-confidence, unable to make decisions, uncaring attitude towards family and responsibilities. You might experience mood swings or loss of appetite and trouble sleeping, change in your sexual drive, unmotivated and unfocused you become. How about social withdrawal? Maybe you're drinking too much, or there's a reduced level of performance and productivity. Now, there are times when you experience stress, and that's like basically when, you know, there's a pressure or a threat to your well-being with little or no resources to counter the problem, right? Or maybe you have no network of support system in place. A lot of people experience that, right? So it's important to have a support system when you're going through some difficult challenges, right? When we experience major life changes, such as losing a job or a change of environment. When we're unable to sleep at night. Sleep is super important. Super, super important. Now, I'm not always good about getting a lot of sleep though, so talking to me too. And I always tell you guys that, right? I'm honest with you. I'm talking to me. Sometimes my mind is just going. I'm thinking about what's going to happen the next day. I'm thinking about what's happening next week, and my mind just will not shut off, right? But that next day, honey, I definitely feel that I did not sleep. And it is not good. It's not a good feeling when you feel like you can't keep your eyes open, but yet you need to keep your eyes open. So sleep is really, really important. And I mean, you got to help me, Village. I got to figure out a way. I got to find a way to be able to relax so I can get some sleep. It could also mean that you're, you know, maybe dealing with some poor physical health issues, right? Or you may be finding it difficult, to control your emotions. So those are some reasons why we can experience stress. Now, prevention and treatment of stress, like what can we do, right? Well, you know, different triggers cause stress. And when you can identify your trigger, meaning what is it that, you know, all of a sudden causes you stress, right? Because it'll make it easier to develop personalized ways to deal with the stress, you know, or you can experiment with various ways to manage your mental health. And so some basic approaches that you can consider is like exercising regularly. Let me tell y'all, I can't wait to get back in the gym. I cannot wait to get back in the gym. It makes a difference. Daily exercise, it produces stress-relieving hormones that improve your physical and mental health. And I'm saying for me, that does work. But you know what? You don't have to be in the gym. You can just go for a walk. Walking is very good exercise, and it doesn't produce as much stress on your body, right, as a lot of the exercises that we might even do in the gym. So walking is a good exercise. Again, having a support system, right? Reach out to others. You can attend support groups or stress management programs. You can consult a healthcare professional, or maybe you have a friend or someone, a family member you can talk to. How about engaging in hobbies that you enjoy, right? Intentionally setting time, you know, aside to do something that you can enjoy might help to relax you and increase your overall mental health. Eat healthy. All right, so every once in a while, you might make a run to like some fast food joint. I won't name anything right now, but eat healthy, you know, like salads and some fruit and stuff like that or whatever, you know, do that. I do that as well. I drink lots of water, blah, 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 right? But, you know, if you're eating something that might be triggering some stress, you definitely want to pay attention to that. You can practice relaxation techniques, right? Adopt a technique that works for you, such as meditation, yoga, deep breathing, or a massage. How about managing and prioritizing your tasks? You know, to avoid feeling stressed, consider establishing a system where you address the most important tasks first, and then gradually work your way through the ones that are of lesser importance so you don't become totally and completely overwhelmed, right? And again, know your triggers. Identify the types of situations that make you feel out of control, right? These are your triggers. A lot of people don't like that word, but what would you say then? If you don't say trigger, then what would you say? You know, maybe that's something for you to think about, but you have to be able to identify what is the thing that causes you stress, and whatever you want to call that, if not triggers, then find the word that works for you and also the solution. Okay. I'm giving you some examples of what you can do, but ultimately you have to be able to know what works best for you. And when you know what your triggers are, then you can avoid those situations, or at least you can manage them better. So, how long does stress last? It's normal to feel stressed sometimes, and it can happen over the short term or long term. And long term stress may cause unhealthy behavior. So try to prevent stress by avoiding your triggers and seek medical attention when you find that you can't cope with the pressure and demands of your life. It's becoming too much. It's overwhelming. When you have thoughts of hurting yourself. When you start thinking about hurting yourself, definitely what you want to do is, if there's no one that's in your circle or in your corner, friend, family, if you're in school, a teacher, church, you might have a spiritual advisor, well, then call 988, right? Call 988. that is, you know, the crisis and suicide prevention, the lifeline, basically, right? And, you know, somebody there might be able to help you with some resources, might be able to point you in the right direction, you know, of someone that can assist you further. But you're not alone. You don't have to, you know, go through it by yourself, okay? And then, you know, just as I say, take the steps to manage your stress so, you know, that your symptoms, you know, don't persist. But, you know, if they do, maybe if you have a medical doctor, if you have a primary care physician, perhaps you want to talk to them and see what they can do to help you, right? If you're feeling chest pain, you're experiencing shortness of breath, back pain, pain that's burning into your shoulders and your arms, any dizziness or nausea, right? Those are kind of the things that you want to like sort of pay attention to. If you're experiencing any of those things, consult your doctor, all right? So there you have it, Village. Stress in our lives is inevitable, and it can help us to respond in times of danger, but too much of it is not good for our minds or our bodies, right? So find ways to manage stress so that it does not have a negative impact on your whole body, right? Again, yoga, meditation, journaling, breathing exercises, any or all of these coping strategies may be able to help you. So, you know, see what's up, see what works for you. Because you're never going to know until you begin to explore, all right? Be intentional about taking care of yourself. You dig? Here's to brighter days. Now, Village, if you've been listening to this show, then you should know by now that each and every week I talk about Black history. I believe that we should talk about Black history all year long because Black history is American history. So let's talk about it. On this day in 1968, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. famously delivered his I've Been to the Mountaintop speech at the Mason Temple Church of God in Christ in Memphis, Tennessee. Now, in his speech, King reflected on his life's work. Quote, like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. Unquote. Tragically, just one day later, the civil rights leader was assassinated by James Earl Ray as he stood on a balcony at the Lorraine Hotel in Memphis, leaving behind a legacy of nonviolent resistance against racial and social inequality. In addition, on this day in 1963, Dr. King led a drive against discrimination in Birmingham, Alabama. The scene turned violent when the city's police force, led by Commissioner Eugene Bull O'Connor, unleashed high-powered hoses and dogs against demonstrators. And that is Black History Wednesday. Next up, beautiful people, is a song that was recorded by Babyface and Toni Braxton. Uh-huh, I can feel it. Y'all know what I'm talking about, right? It came from the Boomerang soundtrack starring Eddie Murphy. Now, this collaboration was released as a single that same year, reaching number 29 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 and number 2 on the Billboard Hot R&B Singles chart, behind another song from the Boomerang soundtrack. Has anyone ever heard of Boys to Men? Mm-hmm. End of the Road. Don't you love that song? I do. Now, here they are singing their song, Give You My Heart.
Since you found a place in my heart.
This next song peaked at number 7 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 and number 3 on the Billboard Hot R&B Singles Chart, while reaching the top 10 of the Canadian Singles Chart. The music video for You Mean the World to Me was directed by Lionel C. Martin. Larry Flick from Billboard described the song as a warm and fuzzy ballad. Here's You Mean the World to Me, and when we come back, I will get into today's topic. Okay, kings and queens, today I would like to talk about African-American children experiencing grief and loss. Now, in my opinion, sometimes adults do not take into account just how much our young kings and queens can be impacted by grief and loss. It can be a family member or a friend. We have to realize that loss can be just as difficult for our young people to process it as it is for us to. Even before the pandemic, children of color experienced more loss than white children due to historical and persistent health inequities. Now, the pandemic only widened this gap. So, as of October 2021, one out of every 310 black children versus one out of every 412 Latine children experienced orphanhood or the death of a caregiver, compared to one of every 753 white children. Now, after a loss, children need the support of a parent to make sense of their grief and to strengthen their strategies to cope. Now, there is a program in my favorite city, Boston. Yes, the Bean. And it was established in 1996 called the Good Grief Program. And it's at Boston Medical Center. Now, it provides therapeutic support to the hospital's pediatric patients who have experienced significant loss. The wonderful things about this program is that it also provides support during abrupt moves, terminal diagnosis, separation due to divorce, as well as incarceration or immigration. Right? How about that? Now, Maureen Patterson Fetty, I hope I've said her name correctly, she is the program manager, and she states that there is consistent research that black and brown kids have experienced more deaths and at younger ages compared to some of their white counterparts, their white peers, right? And we also know that there's a ripple effect of secondary losses after a death, impacting a range of things like access and wealth generation. Now, childhood bereavement is intricately weaved into the systemic forces that we know affect health equity. Now, for some from different ethnic backgrounds, they may have a different understanding of what therapy actually is. So there's a definite learning curve. And they also may be hesitant to engage with a formal helping system, particularly if they're undocumented or if there's an ongoing custody issue. Now, with this grief program, there will be times when families will come in with a primary loss. But sometimes it's the second and tertiary losses, meaning second and third losses, that are most present for them. And in order to hold for these young people experiencing a grief and loss, the Good Grief Program uses the Thrive screener, Thrive as we're thriving, right? They use that screener to find out about social determinants of health issues like housing insecurity, food insecurity, issues with unemployment and caregiving, right? That initial screening, it really is an assessment that helps us to be able to say, is your plate full, right? This is an opportunity for us to be able to maybe see what lies beneath. A lot of times you can't judge a book by its cover, right? So you seem more concerned about your housing situation than your grief right now, because, you know, that might be, even though somebody's experiencing grief, there might be something that's a little bit more, you know, on their plate. So let me help you with the housing first, right? So being grief providers, you know, they can also connect patients to community resources. So a social worker, a navigator, or another person like, I don't know, me, a mental health and wellness advocate, right? If you're in the hospital, you can help patients fulfill those other needs of concern. Now, I'd like to talk about how this program addresses different cultural responses to grief. They work to normalize grief as natural and not something to stigmatize or pathologize, right? Our families may not have had many conversations about their loss and how hurt they are, but we offer them grace, she says, and space, and reassure them that they are, you know, what they're going through is very, very hard and exactly what we would expect, so that nobody feels like they're not normal, right? Now, central to their approach is an acknowledgement that, you know, we are often serving families who have experienced loss due to violence, incarceration, and again, immigration. And I think the most important piece of their work is to make sure that they're creating a space where families can feel comfortable and start to share their stories. You know, that's a really important part of healing, being able to share your story. I'm learning that more and more, right? Now, part of their assessment of families is around understanding their cultural and religious beliefs, which makes sense, right? So they can understand how they see death and loss, as well as understanding what they know to be true about mental health and mental health services, right? They want to take time to see what lies beneath. Don't want to assume anything, because people do see things differently, and it impacts the way that, you know, they might, you know, look for or accept help. So once we have that understanding, we then partner with the family to provide psychoeducation around childhood bereavement, childhood development, supportive parenting, and mental health within the context of their cultural beliefs. Now, most of the time, it is seen as building a bridge between the clinical pieces and the cultural pieces, since we, she says, never want to position ourselves as the experts or invalidate a family's cultural framework. So for a period of time after loss, there is an expectation that children will struggle both socially or with even like their schoolwork. So as they're processing the loss, they're often able to move back to where things were before the loss, right? Sometimes something gets in the way of them being where they want to be. So they look for signs of a child being quote unquote stuck, like a lot of us could be stuck, right? After a loss. And those will be the patients that they work with on a longer term. So now they also have younger children, right? And, you know, they do work with them. And they also like work to give their caretakers support. You know, the tools that the caregiver will need in order to support the grieving child. And then for the older kids, you know, they do individual therapeutic work with them and they consult the parents separately. So there's just so much need right now. I think we just need to recognize that. And that's what the program manager, Maureen Patterson-Fetty, recognizes as well in this work that she's doing in Boston. So kudos to you, Maureen, for everything that you're doing up there in the Bean. Maybe I'll get a chance to meet you one day, but I appreciate all that you're doing. And, you know, Village, I hope that there was some information in there that could be helpful to you, because we need to remember that young people have thoughts and feelings around these more difficult topics in life, and making space for them as they process things is a healthy way, and it'll go a long way, as a matter of fact, if we start doing that. Okay? Here's to brighter days. Should I even listen?
that we be more than friends. You made me smile, I was down. You turned my world around. The way you give me love feels so right. Ooh. Use up the ease of my mind and put it behind.
That was one of my favorites, Love Should Have Brought You Home Last Night. Daryl Simmons and Bo Watson produced this song along with Babyface and L.A. Reid. Now, can you imagine, Village, listening to Anita Baker singing this song? Because it was originally written for her. And you know what? For the first time, because y'all know how I am, right? For the first time, I would have to say that I think that I would have liked to have heard Anita Baker sing it. I think I could hear her sing it. But you know what? I always believe that usually the song always finds the right home in the person that sings it, right? I'm going to still go with Tony, but I could have heard Anita. I think I could. And it was followed by I Love Me Some Him. Now, while it received a lot of airplay, there was never a video for that song, but it has definitely become one of her most requested singles. Beautiful people, it's time for this week's inspirational story. Here's the story. One day, my mother and I were working together in the garden where we were transplanting plants for the third time. Grown from seed in a small container, the plants had been transferred to a larger container, then transplanted into the garden. Now, because I was moving, we were transplanting them once again. Inexperienced as a gardener, I turned to my green-thumbed mother and said, "Isn't this bad for them?" I asked as we dug them up and shook the dirt from the roots. "Won't it hurt these plants being uprooted and transplanted so many times?" "Oh," my mother replied, "transplanting doesn't hurt them. In fact, it's good for the ones that survive. That's how their roots grow strong. Their roots will grow deep and they will make strong plants." Now, often I have felt like those small plants, uprooted and turned upside down. Sometimes I've endured the change willingly, sometimes reluctantly, but usually my reaction has been a combination. "Won't this be hard on me?" That's what I usually ask. "Wouldn't things be better if things remained the same?" That's when I remember my mother's words. That's how the roots grow deep and strong, which is, by the way, the name of this story. So, what was the person in this story saying? What's the moral of the story? Well, sometimes we may not always be comfortable with change, but change can teach us to adapt and help us develop resilience, but only if we understand our own capacity for growth and learning. You dig? Here's to brighter days.
You just don't know.
Yeah.
fade away. I can't forget the day you left. Time is so unkind, and life is so cruel without you here beside me.
That was How Many Ways, a song that was written by Braxton along with Vincent Herbert, Philip Field, Ben Garrison, Keith Miller, and Noel Goring for her self-titled album, which was released in 1993. The song is built around a sample of God Make Me Funky, which was a 1975 song by American jazz fusion band The Headhunters featuring the Pointer Sisters. Now, due to the inclusion of the sample, several other writers are credited as songwriters. And it was followed by a song that you know, Village, okay? we would not have had to, like, we couldn't have gone anywhere. We could not have closed the night out without playing this song, right? Y'all would have came for me if I didn't play Unbreak My Heart. What? Who wouldn't do that? The song was written by Diane Warren and produced by David Foster. It won Best Female Pop Vocal Performance at the 39th Annual Grammy Awards in 1997. It has sold over 10 million copies worldwide, nearly 3 million in the United States alone, making it one of the best-selling singles of all time. Yep, I saved the best for last. I hope that you've enjoyed the tribute to Toni Braxton. I am a firm believer in giving people their flowers while you still can. Thank you, Toni, for all of the talent that you have shared with the world. You have given us a treasure trove of timeless classics. Well, kings and queens, it looks like we've come to the end of another show. I do hope that the information provided will be of help to you. Remember, it's always a good idea to do your own research, no matter what the topic is, especially if your life is involved. It is always a pleasure and an honor to be here with you in the Village each and every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in this week, and I look forward to being with you all again here in the Village every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, be sure to follow Village Mentality on Instagram at villagementality.ckm, as in Mary, and on Facebook at Village Mentality, the podcast. You can also catch all episodes of Village Mentality on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor, Radio Public, and there are links available on Instagram, once again, at villagementality.ckm, as in Mary, and on Facebook at Village Mentality, the podcast. And just remember that God has got me and he's got you too. Be blessed, beautiful people, and here's to brighter days.
Energy so stale in the air. Everybody's running scared. We used to be so carefree. Used to be so happy. Used to have everything we need.
Yeah.